It's your True Faith Podcast. I'm your host. This time it's Mickey Collin. I'm joined by regular contributor Si and Ben, and delighted to welcome George Corkin of The Athletic. How are you?
Trailing misery in my wake as always.
And Si's here as well to add another element of misery.
Add more misery, yeah.
With a big smile on my face.
So me, yeah, Si's
revelant. We've got Kathy Bates as well.
Me and Ben will try and inject some positivity where we can, but I'm not going to lie, it feels like it's going to be pretty difficult to do that today. Obviously, we all watched that absolute... What would you even call it? Is there an adjective that we haven't used so far to describe that performance yesterday? Anyone got anything interesting?
It was a Steve Bruce performance, Mickey.
Oh, that's not what it was.
It was a tidal wave of diarrhea. How about that?
Yeah, that about covers it. thanks for listening. So Newcastle have been losing games at home to bad teams for absolutely ages. And my first question to you is do you think that we're possibly overreacting to just a bad day at the office? George, I'll come to you first since you're the guest.
That's very kind of you. No, because I think it was the kind of performance and result that generates that kind of response. I mean, I think that's absolutely... I mean, it wasn't just bad, it was really bad. I mean, it was really, really bad. And we're used to seeing bad performances. We've seen a lot of those in recent times. But, you know, that was one of those ones where you scratch your head and think, well, that was the worst since maybe only 3 months ago or 4 months ago. But but it was terrible. And I think when you have a performance like that at home, that just has no redeeming features, I think it's okay to have a pretty visceral, unpleasant response to it. It does, you know, there is that slight feeling that it's a bit Newcastle-y, that I think we were all, or most of us, eyes emoji to the left. You know, might have actually been feeling all right after West Ham. Certainly, I think in relative terms, I enjoyed that. And so it does feel like that was kind of quite a big crash at the end of that kind of swing of emotion. We are two games in, you know, we're talking about three or four signings have been good, but have only been at the club for a couple of weeks. I'm not trying to make excuses. I think that response is pretty fair enough, because there's no redeeming feature to that.
Yeah, I think it's a slight overreaction, as in, like, if you've watched social media for the last 24 hours, it's been insane. Like, it's been a massive blow up, as if this was like unexpected. If Newcastle had lost 3-0 at home to Brighton in the midst of some good results, or if it was like an outlier, you wouldn't get this reaction. It's because it's just happening again, and because you've just described it, both of you, it doesn't feel like that long since it happened before. So It's the fact that it's continuing to happen is what's upset people so much. It's like, well, okay, we had that positive start against West Ham, but we've already reverted back after two games to the kind of the shit Newcastle that everyone was expecting once again. So,
but can we say that? Can we say reverted back? If we've had one good performance and one okay performance and one awful, awful performance, is that reversion, or is it just, is this a mid-table team that's not very good?
You could argue that Blackburn were the better side on Tuesday as well.
No,
so.
That's no argument.
Yeah. I feel like the end of season form, bar that West Ham game, looks like it's going to continue. There was no plan, and it's more than 12 months since Bruce has been at the club, and the people who were maybe having a bit of patience are now running out of it. And there's a lot of factors, and I don't know, statistically before that game, we haven't scored at home to Brighton in the Premier League ever.
Got one in a 1-1 draw. No, that was away, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was away. We haven't scored at St. James's against them in this league, and, you know, fourth time of asking, it's happened again. Like, I think people, it's just that pent up thing of that was a good season potential, that West Ham game. Right, if he wins this one, we really could get off to a good start, and this could be a really positive season. But it feels like that's gone out the window already. And if we just lost the game, you'd think, oh, fair enough. But it's the manner in which we lost the game, with no plan, no shots, no anything to get excited about. And it's like, where do we go from here, other than through the exact same season we've experienced for like 5 years now? People are just sick of it.
Yeah, it's no surprise, is it, that we've kind of ran on with the same form as we finished the season, disregarding the West Ham game, which now becomes more clear that was as much a result of West Ham just being absolutely shocking as Newcastle doing anything right. Now, not to take anything away from the performance, because we did play well against West Ham, but it's very easy to play well against the worst team in the league, which I think West Ham are, and this result against Brighton just shows you where Newcastle are going to be this season. It was kind of defined as the game that was going to show us whether we're going to be any good or not, because Brighton are going to be in and around where we thought we were going to be at the start of the season, and it's gone worse than any of us could have imagined. I think what's so disappointing is, like, everyone could see it coming, and it just seemed like there was no tactical thought in the lineup at all. Ben, I don't know if you agree, disagree. And, yeah. You know, is it necessary in a Premier League club to think about whether it's fair to drop someone?
Yeah, that's a ridiculous excuse, isn't it? That you didn't want to drop Carroll because it would have been unfair. When he loses his job potentially in a few months, at what point is he then going to be ruined being fair to Andy Carroll? It's a difficult one. I mean, I think just to pick up on a couple of points you said there, you're saying West Ham are the worst team in the league. I actually think they played really well against Arsenal the other night, and it's a difficult one to put into context where teams are at this point. It's you've got a Brighton team that played quite well against Chelsea and got smashed 3-1, and then have absolutely battered us. We played quite well against West Ham and then fell apart against Brighton. It was pathetic. And then you've got West Ham who were pathetic against us and then actually put in a pretty good performance against Arsenal. So tell me where out of those three teams, who's at what point? They're all on the, well, what two of the teams are on 3 points. One of them's on none, but who would you say is in that little ranking of who's the better team and who's not? I think you could probably argue Newcastle are at the bottom of those three teams at the minute off the back of that Brighton performance.
There's something kind of very interesting, Si, you mentioned that thing about social media blowing up, and of course it does, and it always does, and we're used to that. I had to write something today. This is my boss's idea. It wasn't really my idea, but it was about that whole sense of two games in and everybody is losing their shit. I mean, at every club. I mean, and I'm sure that's just part of the world we live in.
One game if you're a Man U fan.
Or one game if you're a Man U fan and he should be sacked and he's out of his depth. And there is that sense that I think when you have a stadium, you have an anchor somehow. And, you know, I'm sure we've seen things, whether it's about protests here at Newcastle or boycotts and things like that. Everyone gets incredibly excited. And then when Saturday comes along, the stadium is actually quite a conservative place a lot of the time. Not always, but a lot of the time. And we don't sort of have that thing to relate everything back to. Now, I'm sure the stadium yesterday, if it had been full,
would not have been a nice place. It would have been a toxic place.
It would not have been a nice place. But
after 5 minutes, to be fair.
Yeah, and so I'm kind of making a wider point that somehow, because of the situation we're all living in, we've lost that sort of beacon of how you relate to something. It's like, that was bad, but was it bad enough to boo them off in their first home game of the season? Well, yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. It actually probably was. Even though I always think that, you know, Newcastle as a fan base traditionally would be very, very reluctant to do that for the first game of the season, because, you know, there would be that thing. You don't want to be a fan base that is constantly sort of agitating and all that sort of stuff. Anyway, that's a slightly separate point. But I do think we're now in this world where we're constantly losing our shit about sort of everything because we're not with people.
Yeah.
There's an element of that. I would agree with you on that. And I also agree with the point you made earlier that, as usual, Newcastle did all its business 4 days before the season started. So I can... And I said this in my match special for before the game against Brighton, that I can concede that we're not going to see like a full tactical plan with all these new lads and everything ready straight away. But it was so bad. Like, it wasn't... What's frustrating about watching that team was A, the team selection, which I'm sure we'll go on to, but B, there was no sign of progress. And we finished the season really badly, and we should have really been working hard this summer to put that right. And it doesn't look like there's been any change or any improvement in all the existing players, never mind the new guys. I can sort of let off the new guys. They're bedding in the first game at St. James's Park, and they probably just, you know, need to find their feet a bit. And yes, we've got some goals on debuts across the last week, but, you know, that wasn't going to continue. So I think it's I don't think many people believe that this was a blip. I think people believe that it's more likely just to be more of the same, and that's what's worrying about the season, is that we really are just going into another relegation battle, and we've had four already.
Yeah, I mean, I hope you're wrong about that. I mean, but I can't say that with any sort of huge enthusiasm. I mean, this is what the club has been for a long time now, it feels. I mean, I'm very happy. No, I'll rephrase that. I am happy with the business that they've done this summer so far, because I think, you know, I think it is that thing about being sensible signings, and I'm not used to Newcastle behaving like a sensible football club. I think everyone they've brought in will, you know, will improve the team. That said, it's been a team that struggled, and for long, you know, although they've not been in relegation battles per se, if you look at the table since they've come back to the Premier League, each one of those seasons has been fucking horrendous. You know, for large parts.
Yeah.
For large parts.
We've always pulled away at the end of it, really.
And pulled away and had good second half of the season. Not last year. But again, I am happy with those signings, but they're signings that have come from relegated teams. There are not. I'm not seeing clubs queuing up to buy Newcastle's players. So what does that tell you? I mean, I think that sort of tells you something fairly accurate about where the club is and where the team is. I'm relieved about what they've done this summer, because I think it should be enough for them to be okay. And that, so, I kind of felt a bit euphoric when Callum Wilson signed, for example, because I just think that's exactly what the team needed. But I don't think that should be a source of sort of huge celebration, really.
It's a really good point on us as a selling club. Like, Newcastle are one of the teams in the league that we're a happy seller. Like, if we've got someone good, but we get a reasonable offer, we would sell them every single time, regardless of the consequences. We've proved that through the entire Ashley era. Now that feels like a good time, George, to mention that you're doing a full podcast about the Ashley era with The Athletic, I hear. It's brave.
Yes, thank you. Well, obviously we do have our own podcast, which we do weekly, which I hope complements yours. But yes, so one of the things that The Athletic are doing as a company this season is doing sort of special in-depth sort of investigation stuff, not investigation in terms of the nuts and bolts of a club, but taking a long look at the club. So there are three podcasts in this series, and it is about sort of the Ashley years, the takeover, and kind of what happens next and all that. And so they should be available to listen to this week. Thank you.
I'd like to say I'd look forward to them, but it's going to be even grimmer, I think, than listening to this one. Looking back at 13
we'll
years.
Rival you. We'll rival you for that. We'll give it a go.
but yeah, we're a club that teams could easily poach good players from, and nobody is. That's a concern, isn't it? When you think about it, why are people not sniffing after St. Max? And I don't want to go into too much on him, but we saw the first negative trait of his game yesterday, where he just didn't turn up. And, you know, within 3 minutes, he fouled someone in the box needlessly, a mental tackle. And he couldn't recover from it. And I was really shocked to see that from him. And it wasn't something that I'd anticipated, like a bit of a setback early in the game. And he disappeared. And I know he was injured and he hasn't trained today, so it kind of justifies that he was injured. But there was an element in me yesterday when he went down, and I thought, I'm not certain whether he, and this might be really harsh, but I was like, I'm not certain whether he's injured enough to come off or whether he just knows that he's not at it today. And I was massively, massively disappointed. I don't know if any of you guys thought the same, if you want to crucify me for saying that, because he is our best player.
I mean, it doesn't matter either way. He was having an absolute shocker, so injured or not, he needed to come off. So I don't think we need to worry about whether or not he was, you know, pretending to be more injured than he was. Probably not the case. It was time to come off. He clearly wasn't 100%. Even if he was 90%, it wasn't enough, and he was having his life from the guy for
Lamptey.
Yeah. Was superb.
How good is he, by the way?
Yeah, he had his life, and we needed someone on the pitch to cover our left back, who's only played a game, like, you know. So I felt sorry for Lewis in that period, because he was being left totally exposed, and it needed a change regardless of injury or not. So I don't think we need to worry about that too much.
Brings us nicely back onto the question which I tried to ask, and then we've kind of gone on a bit of a tangent, is the tactical setup of the team was clearly so wrong, and that's a perfect example of it as well. You know, having St. Max on the left side in front of a new left back against what's obviously Brighton's attacking side, with that, I mean, the fullbacks come as a bit of a surprise, but it shouldn't have come as a surprise to a professional football club with scouts and, you know, football analysts and people that are supposed to know what's going to be coming for you at the weekend. And it's obviously come as a massive surprise that they've got this hugely, hugely pacey, explosive, brilliantly attacking fullback that's just had Max's pants down time after time after time and left Lewis so exposed. What were the tactics? Why was there no tactics? Do we have tactics? Is anybody at the club capable of setting up a tactical analysis of the opposition and then putting it into play in our team? Or is it just going to be get the lads on the pitch that you think are going to do all right and it doesn't matter how you set them up?
So I think that's a very interesting question, and I don't really know how to sort of answer that in any kind of detail, because I think, you know, I have a measure, I'm old, so I have a measure of sympathy with that, you know, the whole thing of, okay, we won last week, let's just go again with it. Now, I have sympathy with that, because that's kind of what I was brought up with in the sort of 80s, I guess. And, you know, at a time when squads were, you know, tiny, and you could go through a season, you know, with 14 players or whatever. So I'm sort of used to that. And so I think my sense would be, oh, well, they won last week, they did okay. Fine, you're at home now. This is your formation. It's your team. Go out and cause them problems. And so I do have that. I think I have that as my sort of hinterland. At the same time, though, you're right to point out how good Lamptey was, but also how good he'd been against Chelsea in their previous match. And
which Bruce acknowledged in his pre-match as well. It's like we knew it was coming.
Yeah, it wasn't just that one match. He was brilliant in Project Restart. He's had a good run of form this game. It's not as if he's an unknown.
Yeah, and if you were looking at concerns from West Ham, you would say that side, certainly on the defensive side, was one that you'd want to be careful about. So, again, it's not easy to look for a kind of excuse there or look for a kind of redeeming feature from that, because, again, to repeat, I've got that, you know, it's probably a Keegan sort of thing as well. Just go out and prove you're better than them. And I think there is something to be said for that. I do think there's something to be said for that. And how do you measure that when it was also pretty clear that some players were awful? I mean, so you mentioned Saint-Maximin, he was off it from the start. I mean, and, you know, that was something that we heard about when he signed, that there'll be days like this, that there is a, you know, his attitude can be questionable at times. So you just sort of have to live with that. And again, Shelvey, it looked to me, just had one of those really bad days. Andy Carroll, for all that he was effective at West Ham, he looked like he couldn't move. And he was static and isolated and all the stuff that we saw when he played last season. So at what point, you know, at what point do you blame that the formation, did the formation lose the game, or did the players not turn up, or is it a bit of both? But I agree. So to take a step back from what I've just said, if you look at Lamptey as the example, as the case study, nobody comes out of that very well, because the warning signs were there. The warning signs were from Newcastle's performance at West Ham, and they were there from the way that Brighton had been playing too.
I mean, we just didn't have an answer for it though at all, did we? I mean, even he tried to move Hendrick over there. I think after it was probably about 20 minutes or so, he actually moved Hendrick over to the left to try and cover. And let's be honest, he's not pacey. Like he got burnt straight away. And I felt most sorry for Lewis in that he was literally kind of left on his own to deal with these. And in his second game, I mean, obviously he's played a full season for Norwich last year, where he's probably had similar experiences, to be fair. But it's just he was hung out to dry a bit, and I just think there wasn't the problem was there was literally we had no answer for it, and even in the personnel. I mean, I remember we were obviously all WhatsApping during the game, and you said, oh, we've got to get Miggy on. Miggy isn't as quick as this kid. He wasn't going to change if he'd have come on that wing. He wasn't going to make things any better, and he might have doubled up back, and he would have worked harder defensively. I get that, but it was just one of those where we just did not have the personnel to deal with that pace.
I don't think I agree. And I think when Almiron came on, it did ease it up a bit down that side.
A moderate improvement.
Yeah. You know.
But only because St. Max literally was doing nothing. That's my point, Max wasn't getting back. At least Miggy would have worked back and helped out.
Either way though, you know, the Hendrick switching sides comes after 20 minutes, whatever it was. Almiron comes on at halftime. We're 2-0 down after 7 minutes because of that one decision playing that left side. And I do feel sorry for Lewis. And, you know, Lewis is fast. Like, he's a seriously fast player. And there was a point in the first half where there was a foot race between him and Lamptey down the right-hand side, and he lost it and fouled him really badly. And I thought then, you know, Christ, like, what can we do here? But what we could do is just think about who's going to play on that left side. That's all that needed to happen, is in the build-up of this game, think, they've got, like, the fastest lad in the world playing right-back. Let's put someone that's quick and going to work hard on the left-hand side. That's all it takes.
The reality with pace, though, like you just have to limit the space. The reason he was so effective was he was literally had the full pitch to run into, and Lewis was tucking in, and Maximan wasn't tracking back, and that's why he was so effective, was that once he'd ran past Maximan, who then gave up pretty quickly, he had basically the whole rest of the pitch to run into. And I think that's where the frustration was that it took so long. I mean, the frustrating thing is that the game was done after 7 minutes of the day, and you can complain about the decisions and stuff, but I don't think anybody would have foreseen us being out of the game after 7 minutes. And I think I don't want to stick up for Bruce, because I think he made mistakes, and he cost us the game, I think, in some of his decisions there. But the reality is that he wouldn't have foreseen us being 2-0 down after 7 minutes. And you can't, how can you react to that? That's something that happens that quickly. He made we talked about, he tried to bring Hendrick over, and he made changes at half time, and he did try to correct it. But the reality is that game was done after 5 minutes of the day. And that's the most frustrating thing is, as you say, that it's that pre-match preparation where, okay, the penalties are just a frustrating mistake, but then the second goal is so avoidable as well. And it's just...
Frustrating mistake after 3 minutes? How frustrated can you get in 3 minutes?
I mean, the first 3 minutes were embarrassing anyway.
It was terrible.
That was coming. Listen, I think...
My point is that it was just a tackle he did not need to make. Like, it's a forwards tackle. What's he doing? Getting back, trying to stick his foot in there, winning the ball.
I think it's harsh to blame players and harsh to say that we don't have the personnel to deal with a Brighton fullback who's, you know, just hit the scene. I'm sure we could have.
It just didn't look like it.
I think the setup was all wrong, and I think there's two things. One is that the manager acknowledged that this is a Brighton team who like to have the ball, and they're going to have a lot of the ball, and they work the channels, and they play quite a nice brand of football in that way. So you know you're going to have to do a lot of work to get the ball back. You know you're going to have to press. You know you're going to have to chase players down. So selecting Andy Carroll in that team was never, ever going to work. I would also argue that having a two-man midfield of Shelvey and Hayden wasn't going to work, and it didn't. I think that was where he let us down, is that we weren't set up personnel-wise or formation-wise to deal with Brighton when he acknowledged the way they were going to play. I think what Bruce suffers with, and I can sympathise with a little bit, is that this damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know, we won the first game, so if you change it and you lose, you get hammered. If you don't change it and you lose, you get hammered. And I totally sympathise with that. But my issue with Steve Bruce on these occasions is that he makes the wrong decision more often than he doesn't, in my opinion. I mean, George, I'll let you come back to me, because I don't know if you see it the same way, but it just feels like he gets it wrong, and then he's not very thick-skinned about it, and he'll just find an excuse like it would have been unfair to drop Andy Carroll. I mean, Andy Carroll, he played all right at West Ham. He won a few headers, but he didn't set the world alight. And if he dropped him and played Almiron and changed the formation to deal with Brighton, people would have understood. So that was the...
I think Andy Carroll would have understood.
Yeah, that was a weak excuse. And you're right, Carroll, while winning a few headers, but barely left the centre circle. Whenever we got into West Ham's box, Carroll was at the edge of the box. He wasn't, you know, leading the line, which is what you need, especially if we're going to play, expect not to have the ball, need to counterattack and need to get the ball forward quickly. Launching the ball down the throat of Lewis Dunk for the first 45 minutes was just like painful to watch, and Carroll was nowhere near it, and that's not necessarily his fault. I thought that our passing and playing the ball out was really poor anyway, but Carroll's not going to get 10 yards across to the ball. It needs to be on his head, or he's basically redundant. We played that first half with 10 men, and you could argue 9 because of how poor Maximan was. And
yeah. I would go eight because I thought Shelvey was a disgrace as well.
Yeah, I thought. So there's just too many things wrong with how we set up for that game, and some of that's got to go back to the manager. And it just feels like that's why it feels like the same old, same old. There was no sign of like, well, actually, I can see what he's been trying to do there. I have no idea what he was trying to do there. I have no idea. Fair enough. Brighton had loads of the ball, and they probably hit us by surprise. I mean, they're better than maybe people said before the game. Oh, it's Brighton, we should be beating these. You've got to respect them. They're a decent side, but they're not that good. They probably wouldn't finish in the top 10. There'll be lots of teams that will...
No, you know, haven't spent money, and
there'll be lots of teams that beat them without worrying about it too much, and we're bigging them up like they're some sort of like world beaters. They're not, but fair enough. They came out well. They started the game well, and whilst defensively we struggled so much. What frustrated me even more was when we did have the ball, we had nothing. We had no plan. We weren't getting the ball forward. There was no cohesion between any of our players when we did have the ball for the short periods we did. So, like, no shots on target speaks for itself, but the lack of a plan when we had the ball was just as worrying as how poorly we dealt with Brighton's attack and threat.
That's always been the issue with this Newcastle side, though, isn't it? That whenever we're supposedly the superior team, so it was always, you talked about the record against Brighton is horrific. Huddersfield was the same, we were really poor. I remember Fulham, that Fulham side that got battered from all corners of the country, took 4 points off us that season. We struggle in games where we're meant to be the
it was Derby
team.
It was Derby. They got 11 points.
No, it was Fulham as well. I remember. Was it? Yeah, the Fulham where they ran through. I think it was Kamara ran through in the last minute. Thought we were going to get beat. For whatever reason, this team really, well, it's not for whatever reason, it's because they struggle where they've got to be the protagonist in the game in terms of take the game to teams. And in games where they're expected to offer more in the game, we just can't do it for whatever reason. And that's where I think, and you mentioned Shelvey, that's been the most frustrating thing about Shelvey in his Newcastle United career, is that in the games where you would expect him to come into the fore and dictate the play and show that he is a better player than all of them, because I think most of us would probably say that Shelvey would walk into any of those sides normally. Those are the games where he just doesn't turn up and he doesn't dictate the play. And it's actually the bigger teams where it's easy. We don't have to worry about having the ball and we can just defend and try and hit on the counter, actually where we come into our four. And I think that's the biggest problem that I think Bruce has got, where he comes into these games where the expectation is on us to take the game to them. And he's talked himself about wanting to play more for football, and having putting his own stamp on the team and stuff. But it, as you said, like what does that look like? Where is that coming from? And this is the type of game really where he should be able to display that and show the fruits of his work up to this point. And that was it. And it was pathetic. And it was shocking.
And sadly, Newcastle are not a good enough team to have one player having an off day, let alone two. And they haven't been. That's been the case for a long time. And that's just the kind of team that we are at the moment. And it's not what anybody wants. But I think we've seen the sort of continuation of that. I suppose the difficult thing is watching a team like Brighton is that you can see the plan very clearly. And they did finish below Newcastle last season. But you can see what they're trying to do, and there's a very obvious plan on the pitch, and they're doing what they want to do. And they might not win every week, but they're doing what they want to do. And I agree. I think you look at Newcastle and it's shapeless. And we know the kind of team that they're going to be. They're going to be a counter-attacking team. They have been a counter-attacking team. And if you buy Fraser and Wilson, Bournemouth transitioned to becoming more of a counter-attacking team in the last couple of years, and that's where their skill lies. So I don't see any of that changing with Newcastle. There's pace up front if you take Andy Carroll out, you know, and there's movement and there's an attacking threat, but the way they're going to work is like that. They're still not going to be comfortable at keeping the ball for long periods, I don't think, and I think that causes a problem. I mean, home, what does home mean now? It doesn't really mean very much if you don't have a crowd there. I don't know. I mean, maybe it does. Maybe there's still that sort of impetus to do something. But you're right. It's when you're expecting the team to be the ones doing something that they struggle. But you saw that in microcosm against Blackburn in the Cup. I mean, that was awful to watch. I mean, you know, Blackburn looked like Man City. They look. I mean, again, with Tony Mowbray as manager, you know what you're going to get. You know you're going to have possession-based football. I think, you know, maybe we hoped we were going to see a little bit more of that at Newcastle, but it just looks, it kind of still has that shapeless feel. You can't, if there's a plan beyond, you know, beyond counter-attacking, whatever that means, I don't quite know what the plan is or how it's going to work.
Well, we're going to try in the second half of the show and be a little bit more positive about Bruce, but my big concern about what's happened over the past 7 days is all of us in this room and a vast swathe of the Newcastle fan base across social media, and if you just speak to people, if you're texting your pals out in the lads, everybody knew that this weekend was going to go wrong. You know, Alex has taken great delight in highlighting his message to Norman through the week about, is Bruce going to play Carroll? And if he does, it's wrong, and it's going to prove to be wrong, and it was. And like, everybody kind of knew that already. Like, we were going to come into this game and set up wrong, and all of us knew it.
Are you sure?
But Bruce didn't know it.
I remember a preview where you and Adam both projected a 1-1 or 2.
Well, I always massively.
And
behind the lads. But on a serious note, we knew things were going to be set up wrong this weekend, and it feels like almost everyone else knows that it's going to go wrong before the people that are running the football side of the club. Like, why is that? That's madness.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just the selection of Andy Carroll, but that is one of the key factors. He just wasn't right for that. I mean, I don't think he's right for any game. I'm fucking sick of Andy Carroll. He's not played well in the year he's been here. He's got like 4 assists in 30-odd appearances. That's crap. That's not good. If you're meant to be the target man...
Oh, you must have enjoyed the first 20 seconds at West Ham. That was brilliant. Come on.
If you're a target man, it's not okay just to have a couple of assists like and not score any goals in the Premier League. If your target man gets you 4 assists and no goals, you're going to get relegated. Like, we should not be building a team around Andy Carroll. He should not have got a new contract based on last season. It's an absolute waste of a shirt, and it's really fucking annoying to watch every week, and everyone saw that coming, and he's not... any better, he's totally immobile.
Only the waste. It's only a waste of a shirt if you're confident that the club would filled it with somebody else.
Exactly. Which we wouldn't have.
I honestly think I'd rather Muto was playing or Gale. Like, it's...
I was going to say Muto wouldn't be getting a game even if Carroll wasn't there, let's be honest.
He would still offer more than Andy Carroll, though. That's my opinion.
I know he would, but he Bruce
or,
wouldn't be
or
playing.
Or we should have played Almirón and played differently and try to get the ball to Wilson using a bit of counter-attack. But, I mean... either way, I'm just fucking sick of the Andy Carroll saga. Like, he shouldn't be here. It's really annoying. I'm sick
he's
of
got,
the whole... He's a local lad, so give him a chance. I don't care. I don't care if he's a local lad. It means nothing. He's not good enough to play Premier League football at all.
The problem is he shouldn't be starting at this stage of his career. That's the issue. I think there's a role for him to come off the bench for 10, 15 minutes in a game where you've got to go direct and try and get back in, and he can't just run around like a headless chicken, headbutting, like...
run around in a 5-yard radius.
Well, yeah. But like there was times last year where he was effective at times. I mean, the Man U game, for example, that we won at home, he had a big hand in that. But I completely concede. The point is that he shouldn't be starting games for Newcastle United in 2020. How he's managed to get ahead of Joe Linton in the pecking order. After
Naby ahead of
Joe Linton. After the pair, like, as bad as their seasons were, Joe Linton still managed to score 2 goals. Carroll didn't. Like, I know he offers more. I'm taking the mick a bit with that.
But I think then this is the problem, though, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, so by all accounts, or certainly by Steve Bruce's account, Carroll had a good pre-season and there was no other striker. I mean, if you don't include Joe Linton, which I don't, there was no other striker who was anywhere near the first team. So I think that almost left him with no choice, and I think he did okay at West Ham. I mean, you know, was it running back? But I did really enjoy the first 20 seconds. I mean, I'll repeat that. And I mean, I want more of that. And, you know, there was something there. And I think him and Wilson did okay together. And there was a bit of promise there. But equally, you then fast forward a week and they're so isolated. And Andy Carroll can't run around to make something happen anymore. So, you know, it then looks like a horrific decision. I think he's fourth choice. I think in an ideal world, Andy Carroll is fourth choice striker.
He should be a last resort.
But where are the others? You know, where are the others? So you have Wilson. My great fear is still if something happens to Wilson, and I think we saw a glimpse of that again against Blackburn, suddenly what happens? You know, there was just not, you're left with a fella who were the best one in the world. You know, at least if Andy Carroll could get to the box, he would know what to do when he got there. Joe Linton can get to the box, but chooses not to and doesn't know what to do. And I think that's the sort of dilemma. It was such a relief when Dwight Gale came into the team towards the back end of the season, because suddenly you've got a fella who the club have tried to get rid of for 2 years, but you've got a fella who knows what to do. And he can't always do it because he's maybe not at that level, but it was such a relief. And that's why Wilson was, you know, such a relief to sign, but they need help. They need to fill, you know, at least another loan signing with a striker, because it's not enough as things stand.
We shouldn't even talk about Wilson getting injured, because we might as well just pack it all in there and then, like,
it would be very scary.
We would get relegated, wouldn't we? Let's be honest. I mean, Carroll's not going to score. Joe Linton literally cannot score. No. Gale's out for at least 3 months and will probably get another injury over the course of the season, because that's how he is.
You can't get through a season like... you can't have another season like last season. That can't happen again. And they won't get away with it. They won't get away with it again. You don't get away with 2 seasons like that in a row. And
lucky to get away with one, really.
Yeah, yeah.
If you look at the statistics for last season, we should have got relegated. We should have been relegated.
You know, you have to take seasons like that and be happy for them. Happy is maybe not the right word, but you know, be grateful for it,
that you got away with it,
because it should and could have been a lot. Yeah, but sometimes you have good seasons like that. I mean, when we finished fifth, that was a season when everything ran for us. You know, So you would have big injuries, and whoever came into midfield, whether it was James Perch or whatever, it was seamless. And I'm not saying last season was seamless because it was horrific, but but it didn't. You know, they found a way of winning, or they, you know, I was at Bramall Lane, and I still can't believe how Newcastle won that game.
That was a great night. Yeah,
totally enjoyed that.
It was ridiculous. I mean, it was astonishing. But they had a season like that. But you don't get away with two seasons like that in a row.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think that's the problem for me, is that after two games, we're now looking to see, are there three teams worse than us and struggling? I'm struggling with that. I mean, West Brom don't look good enough. Fulham don't look good enough. West Ham are in you know, as much turmoil as we are, probably more so than we were at the start of the season. Beyond that, I'm struggling for anyone who looks worse than us. And it's two games in. Like,
well, God, it was 50% all right. Come on.
The last two and a half weeks have just summed up what it's like to be a Newcastle fan perfectly, haven't they? You know, we've had the crushing low of the latest takeover breaking news, swiftly followed by three massively unexpected, genuinely positive, good signings. And then we go to West Ham and play really well. Or seemingly play really well, come away with 3 points away from home. First time we've won the first game of the season for feels like literally 150 years. And then you play Blackburn in the cup and you're shit. And then you play Brighton at home in the league and you're shit and lose 3-0. And it's the turbulent nature in Newcastle summed up perfectly. And this is a question that I think might give some of you the chance to be slightly more positive about Bruce. I'm not looking at you. But is this just what it's going to be like? Or are we just going to be this up and down basket case roller coaster club that Newcastle United have always been? And if we think about it like that, last season Bruce got away with that, and he overachieved from what most of us expected last season by doing exactly that, by being up and down, a bit yo-yo. Are we going to be able to see the same thing from Newcastle again, and is it going to be enough? Si, I'm not coming to you.
Enough for what, though? Are you talking about avoiding relegation? As the sum total of what we want this season again?
Let's be realistic, though. Like, yes, that's what we're in for, isn't it?
I mean, it is, yeah. And it's horrible to say that. It is horrible to say that. But, you know, if you think back 15 months, whatever it was, to last summer, and what do you set out? Well, it was like, okay, well, I'd take staying up now at that point. I'd take staying up. And then you have what's happened this spring and summer, and it almost feels, until the signings came in, and it feels like exactly the same thing sort of happening, that there's a trapdoor under the club, and it's like, oh well, hopefully we'll stay up, you know, hopefully we stay up this time again. And it's that's no way to live your life as a football fan. I think the signings came in and there was that jolt of positivity because it was strangely positive, and they've still got time to add to that, and I hope they would. I mean, my hope was just for it to be a little bit better, because you did just want to pull your own eyes out at times last season. But it does feel like that. I mean, I think a lot of teams in the Premier League seen some of the results so far, and the results are crazy in terms of the score lines. And I think Newcastle will be on the wrong end of some of those. I do think that'll happen. I think they'll be okay. You know, it was shit against Blackburn, but we're still in the League Cup. Morecambe this week. I'll be there for that. Can't wait. And then they've got a decent draw. And so one of the things I loved about last season, I mean, it was painful. I called it a cup limp. It wasn't a cup run. But to still be in the cup at that point of the season was still alive. It was still alive with something positive.
We were going to win it.
You then get the Zen lockdown and you get Man City and you think that's probably going to be the end of it. But to actually have something positive and daft and silly and just a bit different to play for.
We might have beat Man City with a full St. James's. We might have. Yeah, Not against all the odds, is it?
I was only there for a couple of games last season after lockdown, and it was so awful. It was so depressing. And you did think, you know, what this place would have been like if it had been full and pissed up and, you know, it would just been a great occasion, at least to start with. You don't, but it was that. When was the last time we had that feeling of a season being alive? I'm okay, championship season, but in terms of something to actually look forward to, and those games were different. You know, they were all almost horrific for different. But except Newcastle found a way, and it was such a novelty. I would like a bit more of that. Just have the season stay alive for a bit longer.
I would take it. I would take it. You know, a season where we avoid relegation and have a decent run in the cup, I'd have it again this year. The fact that that's a massive problem is one that we could do to death, and we'll have to save it for another podcast. Ben, what I wanted to ask you was, have you seen anything so far that worries you that this is going to be significantly worse than last year? Or is Bruce going to do enough to keep us in the league?
I mean, it's hard, as we said, it's two games in. So, and 50% of those games didn't look too bad, but the other 50% looked really, really bad. And that's the problem, is which is the real. Now, as I say, I think that there are two strange results in that. I think West Ham played a lot worse in that game than I expected, but we made them play that way, and I think so. There's positives to take in that we're going to be capable, and I think it comes back to the point I made before, where I think West Ham at home would have expected to take the game at Newcastle, and they couldn't and didn't. So those types of games, I think, will be okay in. It's these other the fixtures of against the clubs that we would probably measure ourselves against. That's going to be the brutal ones, where I think we don't yet have that way of playing or way of breaking them down. And I mean, would basically the answer seemed to be lump the ball up to Andy and see if Callum can get on the end of it. That's not going to be successful in this day and age of football. Unfortunately, it's moved on, and teams know how to counter that. And it's a tough one, because, as I say, hopefully he's learned his lesson off that. That was embarrassing, and I think he doesn't have to worry about upsetting Andy going forward. Hopefully, he'll actually pick a team.
I think we all expected Almiron to start at West Ham, and he didn't. Yeah. And he did surprise us with that. 100%, fair play to him, because it worked. But I mean, I am actually quite looking forward to seeing if there's a way of getting St. Maximin Fraser.
That front four is we talked about. It is potentially exciting.
And Hendrick was really good at West Ham.
Yeah,
and Andy Carroll should be nowhere near it. Nowhere near it.
So, I think there's stuff to look forward to.
And I would always say defensively, we're solid like that. The defense is in the last few seasons.
Let me just give you a stat then on that basis. So someone sent us today. In the last 40 games, we've conceded 3 or more goals 10 times. 10 times. See, 1 in 4 games we've conceded 3 or more goals. That's not a solid defense.
That's a far more worrying reflection on what's happened over the last 10 years. And we've had various debates with some of your esteemed colleagues, George, Luke Edwards, name one, where he disagreed that many of our players have regressed. He tried to say that Lascelles has improved. I completely disagree.
I agree with that.
I think all of our defenders have got worse, bar Manquillo, who's been fairly steady.
Fernandez, I think, is
Fernandez has been
the same or better.
I wouldn't say he's got better, but you know, we're conceding a lot more goals with these players in the team, so you tell me, are any of them getting better? I think that, generally speaking, our squad of players before the signings was just getting worse and worse, and we've had to buy better than we usually buy players to put us back to exactly where we were, which is a real worry that the rest of the team is just getting worse and worse. So that stat about conceding goals is a real worry. It's like that's not the sign of a team that's going to continue to be lucky enough to get enough points. And you said before that Bruce exceeded expectations by getting 44 points. And
he did, though.
Did he exceed expectations by being better than we expected, or did he just get a lot luckier than he expected? And you know what I think of that, but I guess I'm putting that question back to you guys. I think it was pure luck that we got as many points as we did last season, and it would have been totally, totally justified if we'd finished the season with 30 points or less.
The stats are on your side with that, aren't they? Because we were 19th for chances created, 19th or 20th for goals scored. I can't remember exactly what they were, but
we're the bottom two for most.
It's grim to look at. But you know, you can only beat what's in front of you, and like we did that enough times last year to stay. But you know, like that's the black and white of it is, though. We did it enough times last year to stay in the league.
You're right. George said it before. You can't get away with that twice. So no, something has to change.
I mean, I think you have to. I think if a manager deserves shit after a defeat, then he deserves credit after a win, and so he deserves credit for the points total. And I think the one thing that the club have had since they've come back into the Premier League is that they have had a good team in terms of people, and I think that's been nurtured and protected. I think. You know, and I think that's something that Steve Bruce is good at. That sort of being a people person, if you want to call that. I mean, that's his strength. He might not be a tactician, but and he has that way of protecting his players. So I think that's fair enough. I think, yeah, if you look at the underlying stats, it's it's incredibly worrying and alarming. If you look at the overall picture, I think the team had a spirit about it which allowed it to get results that it didn't deserve. And we saw, I think if you see that once over the course of the season, you can say that's a fluke. If you see it a lot of times, you have to say that there's something there. But those stats had to be addressed, because if you don't, you can't. I mean, so when I say that they were lucky to do what they did, you can't rely on spirit. At some point, you need talent and you need hope and you need goals. You know, you need goals. And I can't remember what the question was.
Where did the goals come from? That's a question. And hopefully Wilson's going to step in.
I mean, but there's other things about whether players have regressed or whatever. You know, you can look at Hayden. I think he had a really good season last year. Maybe some of this stuff would have been organic. You know, Shelvey had a good season. He wasn't in the team under Rafa. So, you know, you can look at these things. You can look at these things in sort of lots of different ways.
Sure. Did Shelvey have a good season?
Well, he was in the team. He was back in the team, and kept out of the team by the form of Hayden and Longstaff. Longstaff has disappeared. So, I think you always have these things.
Yeah, I agree. Sean Longstaff fell off a cliff, and he probably wouldn't get in the team at the minute based on the form we saw when he did kind of appear. I don't know what's happened to him. I don't know if it's fitness or injuries or what. But
honestly, man, that ball from Space Jam has been in the change room, because, like, to think about what's happened to Shane and Longstaff, like. Honestly, that's what it looks like, though, isn't it?
Sucked his talent.
Seriously, where is it gone? Well, how did it happen?
He wasn't in the squad. He wasn't in the squad yesterday, was he? And seeing him...
Michael Jordan?
Seeing Longstaff against Blackburn was...
We talked shocking, really. About Shelvey with Luke Edwards as well the other week, and I disagree that he's improved. Yes, he's been in the team, and, you know, under Raffery wasn't getting in the team. And he scored 5, was it in the end, or 6?
6 he got last year.
Top scorer. Which is what he did for Swansea in like 2012. So my argument was that, well, he's basically the same player he was 8 years ago. He's not really improved. He's only just got back to that level he was at Swansea.
Improved for Newcastle.
In the games he scored, he was good, but he same old Shelvey the rest of the time, vacant.
I described him as a liability at the start of last season. Yeah. I would have had him nowhere near the team. And he came in and immediately scored, which showed what I know about football. But, but no, I mean, and you know, that's always, it's... You know, who's improved, who's got worse. It's an interesting one. But at the end of it, you're still left with a team that's...
Yeah, the centre midfield is really important, I think, if we're going to bring someone in before the end of the transfer window.
I'd love to see us bring a centre mid in. Brings us on to our last question quite nicely, that, because you look at the team that started that game yesterday and look at the core of the team through the middle of the park, and you've got Shelvey and Hayden in the middle, you've got Lascelles and Fernandez, centre-half, and you've got Darlow and Gull. That's the core of a team that played for us in the Championship, and it's, you know, this is our fourth season now out of the Championship, and that core of the team is still there. Other teams strengthen the core, because the core is where you win your games, the core is where you get your points, and Newcastle haven't done it. Now, obviously the criticism on that doesn't fall asleep at Bruce's feet for a change. It falls at the people that are in the club.
I disagree with that.
Let me finish the question, and I'll come to you first. Do we need to give Bruce some more time and some more transfer windows to actually build his own team, or have things gone wrong that are... Sai's waving his hands in the air to say no.
No.
Or have things gone wrong at board level and at manager level that mean that it's not going to happen? Ben, I'll come to you first.
Just on that point you said, that it's not Bruce's fault. You would have said Shaw and Lejeune probably would have been our preferred centre-back pairing. As we came up in at the Premier League, Lejeune looked like a world beater at times before.
One of my favourite defenders,
he looked brilliant, could do everything. He's the type of football, and that's the frustration, is that we talk about what style of football we're going to play. Shaw and Lejeune were players that were good enough defensively and were good enough to contribute into the phase of bringing the ball out and playing some more attacking football, and they've been completely shelved for... Probably, and I mean this with all respect, probably the worst footballer in the Premier League in Jamal Lascelles. He's just shocking on the ball. He's a brilliant defender.
You mean that with all respect? Yeah,
the worst technical footballer.
He's got a lot of, what I mean is he's got a lot of strengths. He's a brilliant defender, like great character, and he's got a lot going for him. But the bloke can't play. He's not good enough to play football in the Premier League. In terms of bringing the ball out, he just hasn't got it in him. And then you've got Fernandez, who isn't much better in that facet. Now, they're both good defenders, but Bruce has chosen to go with them, and the fact that Lejeune's gone to, is it, he's gone to Spain now, isn't it? He didn't look great the last, obviously since he's come back from injury, he struggled a bit, but just the fact that he's been paid off. Shaw was being adopted as a centre mid at the back end of last season rather than centre back. That is Bruce's decision making to go with basically your bran flakes rather than your shreddies. Like, I'm sorry, but
sorry.
I mean, yeah, Bruce's decisions part two. He gave Andy Carroll a new contract. He gave Matt Ritchie a new contract. He gave,
he's played no minutes.
Jonjo Shelvey.
Games.
Yeah, Matt Ritchie. I don't really understand what that's about, especially now that we've brought in a different right winger and a different left back. So where's Richie going to play? Who else are you giving your contract to? Shelvey, which, I mean, some people would agree that was a good move. I disagree. I think we need to move on from Shelvey because after 5 years, we've not got any better with him. And to tie him down for another 4 years of the same just means we're kind of accepting our position, which I know it is what we are. We are this perennial relegation battling side until something more dramatic changes about the club. But Bruce has been part of all these decisions to dish out these contracts, and I agree that the club could have done more in the last 4 years to build a Premier League team and hasn't, but he's been part of those decisions for the last 13-14 months now.
He's only been backed once, though, hasn't he? And you know, as much as I've said that core of the team needed a change, striker had to be the priority 100%. Everyone could see that. Bruce could see that. Mike Ashley knew that. Everyone in football knew that Newcastle had to sign a striker. When you've only got so much money to spend, and that's not Bruce's fault, when you've only got so much money to spend and you have to buy a striker, it doesn't leave you a lot to strengthen two other key positions where players are expensive.
Oh yeah, so a bit of context for Carroll. So when that happened, and I spoke to Bruce at the time, and they signed Mankeo at the same time, didn't they? That was just before we started. And they were trying to get Matty back. At that point, he was really worried. He was really worried about what shape the club would be in, the team would be in when it came back after all the, you know, takeover stuff and all the, you know, all the things that were flying around, how that would affect his authority, blah, 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 blah. They were also worried that without the carrot of a contract, as opposed to just playing for a couple more weeks, a few more weeks, that Carroll wouldn't have had and Longstaff didn't have and Mankeo wouldn't have had, whether they would play. And so he was left he was left in a very difficult position where if Carroll hadn't been available, if Mankeo hadn't been available, Longstaff didn't play, you know, blah, 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 but that they would be caught really short. And, you know, you come back, you lose your first game, you lose your second game, you lose your third game.
Well, you see what happened to Bournemouth.
And you see what happened to Bournemouth. So there was a genuine fear on his behalf there. So I think they compromised. He said at the time, you know, Longstaff was the one that they really wanted to kind of get done, and they had to wait for a long time with that. Is that sensible forward planning? No, but nobody could have foreseen what we were coming into this spring, and Newcastle aren't a club that are very good at forward planning. And then, you know, the thing about coming up from the Championship and still being the core of the team, I accept that to a certain point, except that Darlow wouldn't be playing under normal circumstances. And both Lascelles and Hayden are young. I mean, they're young enough to get better. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, coming up with those players and those players growing and being good enough, provided that there's the right amount of competition around them and all those things are being done right. I was delighted that Hayden signed a new contract, for example, because I think he's been really good and is a really important member of the team and the squad. I don't have a problem with that, and I also don't have a problem with, you know, that core spirit of the Championship still being protected. I think that's okay. I think that's been Newcastle's great strength over the past 3 or 4 years. I've hated watching them a lot of the time, but I've loved knowing that there is that sort of all in it together kind of shit. And when you can't, you know, if you can't love your players because of how good they are, if you can respect them and love them because they're trying their hardest, should be a bare minimum, but it hasn't always been at this club. And so, you know, so I would sort of counter that a little bit. It's not, you know, that's not finishing top or second or winning anything, but I think it's at a time when it's been very difficult to love the club, it's actually been okay to love the team because you know that they're decent lads.
There's a famous flag, isn't it? We don't demand a team that wins, we we don't want a team that wins, we demand a team that tries. And we do have that.
And we've had that.
Yeah, we have had that. And I don't like when people criticise our players for not trying, because it's not true. It's not true at all. The opposite is the case. Mm-hmm. You could possibly argue that they try too hard because they're not technically competent enough. The kind of message I wanted to get out at the end of the question, and I'll come to you first, George, because I think you might have a different answer, definitely to Si, is would you trust Bruce? Bearing in mind how well this window's gone, and you know that you have to give Bruce credit for how well this window's gone. You have to. Let me ask the question. Would you trust him to strengthen the next two windows and then judge him after that? Or do we have to judge him right now?
Well, in some ways, I think our opinion is irrelevant because, Ashley will do what he does. And yeah. I think having done, we also don't know what's around the corner in terms of ownership. So, but this is Bruce's window. And I think he's handled it well. I think the players he brought in, they're his players. They're not the scouting staff's players. And after what happened last summer, if you look at the big one, then I'm pleased about that.
Yeah.
So I think he's earned the right. I think, to use that cliche, he's earned the right to take it forward. But with that comes a certain pressure. He certainly didn't have a free pass last season because he never had that from the start. And I'm not trying to defend him for that. That just wasn't the circumstance he walked into. I felt for him as a human being, but there was no honeymoon. There was no stuff like that going on. And again, in terms of the way the season ended, he deserves another go. I mean, I know what you'll say, Simon, because you'll say he doesn't, and that we're on the one way ticket to nowhere, but I do think I think in terms of the league position last season and what he's managed to do this summer, he deserves the chance to move it forward. Whether he's good enough is a different question.
I mean, you said the way we finished last season, awful.
The league table position.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Look, I want to stop getting carried away about the transfer window we've just had. It was good and better than several years previous for Newcastle United, but we've spent 30 million, which isn't much for Premier League clubs in 2020. We've bought three players from relegated teams and another one who Burnley just didn't want to give a new contract to or couldn't agree a new contract with because he's just okay. These players are okay. Fraser's okay. Callum Wilson's decent. He's had one double figures season in the Premier League. He's decent, but it's not brilliant. None of these players are wanted by top 10 clubs. We were the best of the bottom half of the table that fancied giving them a punt because they're what we could afford. And that's the only reason we've bought these players is because they were affordable. It's not because I refuse to describe the transfer we've just had as a change of approach for Newcastle that Steve Bruce has achieved. It's just the same old Newcastle scratting around and getting whatever bargains we can get. And yes, they're better bargains than normal, but
I think signing Callum Wilson, who's 28 for 20 million quid, signals something different. And certainly,
and it's a bargain. Putting them on bigger wages.
I agree. They didn't need to do this. 2 years ago, they could have signed Rondon for 16 million. 2 years ago, when he arrived on loan, Benitez wanted him for 60 million quid. Big wages, but not massively different from what Callum Wilson's on. So I know. But that is, if Bruce has managed to persuade, well, I mean, again, we don't know what Ashley's thinking is here. If this is just protect my asset until I can sell it, fuck it, fine, great, yeah. I'll do that. And it probably is that, okay. that this is just, if we don't do this right, if we don't have guaranteed signings this summer, and there's never a guarantee, but if we don't have tried and tested this summer, then we're going to go down. And that is the real risk. And if he's been listened to, fair enough. Is that a sea change in terms of strategy or in terms of moving the club forward or getting better in a meaningful and significant way? Probably not. But if it's shored stuff up so it's good enough, and hopefully with some slightly better football at the end of it, I'll take that for now.
We'll see in the next window, won't we, whether there's been a genuine change of approach or not. But, we have signed those players this time, and whatever the reasoning behind it, Bruce has picked them. And Ashley's given them the money to do it. Like there is credit due there. There is because it hasn't happened before for whatever reason. And obviously the politics involved and the takeover stuff, the ownership, all of that changes all of the time. So it's impossible to compare a window under Bruce with any of the windows under Rafa because everything was different then. But The ultimate fact of it is we've signed a proven Premier League striker that's old in footballing terms, and especially in Mike Ashley footballing terms, for 20 million quid and put him on a wage that's higher than anyone else at the club. We've signed Ryan Fraser is a good footballer and he was on a free transfer. People would have been looking at him, but Newcastle have got him. We've signed Jamal Lewis, who was a well-wanted footballer. Now, Liverpool bid less than us, so that's why they didn't sign him. But there would have been other teams looking at them, and we've gone and done those deals, and it's Bruce that's put the pressure on, and he's got them done. Now, whatever the reason that Ashley's allowed him to do it, it has happened. So that, you know, the point of it is, that's happened, and do we give him the chance in the next window, assuming that we're going to get some money to spend, which is a massive assumption, obviously. Can you at least give him that? And this is with the caveat that things don't go disgustingly bad for the first half of the season, and we're not in the relegation zone at Christmas. If we're 14th at Christmas, do you give Bruce the next window and possibly till the summer to buy some more players to assemble the team that he wants to have, or is it cut the man from the job now?
Well, you know what my actual answer to that question is, but I'll try to answer it fairly. I would argue this whole, like, it's the first time it's happened isn't true. We invested heavily in the team that McLaren started the season with. We also shit our pants that January and gave him Shelvey and Townsend as well. So we spent something like 100 million over the course of that season and still got relegated. I think they're terrified of that happening again. They've acknowledged that we were really poor for large sections of last season. Certainly the last 5-6 games were atrocious, and we desperately needed to spend some money on some good proven players to not get relegated. That's all we've done, is give Bruce a chance of not getting relegated.
Bruce. He did it.
Bruce has basically said to Ashley, look, I'm not good enough to keep this team up. I need some players. And the players,
we got there.
They don't want to get relegated. And they're probably still in this position where who else is going to come in, manage the club? And I can get that. So it's either.
The key is that the club under Ashley has never been able to put two good decisions together.
No.
And so something would happen. And you think, oh, blimey, that was nice. That's not, oh, we've done, oh, right, okay. And then, or, you know, they finish fifth and then only sign Anita, you know, ahead of a Europa League campaign and stuff like that. They're just not capable of doing that. And so the test is, can they do the next thing? Now, by the time January comes along, we don't know, you know, we don't know what the club will look like, blah, blah, blah. This, hopefully, is enough this summer to get it through. And I think that has been the key factor. At the same time, you would also hope it should be enough for the team to get better. But he is under pressure now because it becomes more, if he wasn't before, because it's more his team now. He's put himself on the line. He got away. I mean, he tried to claim Gillington last summer and sort of said, you know, we've had a remarkable transfer window and things like that. He does have a history of working with peculiar owners, and did it at, you know, certainly did it at Hull and did it quite well, albeit without the scrutiny that Newcastle have, and I think that was part of him sort of trying to sort of do that. But Chillington had absolutely nothing to do with him. You know, that was something that the club would have done, whoever was manager. Tried to force him on Benitez and he said no. And Bruce probably wasn't in that position. He has taken ownership of it now and it is his to own. And so he doesn't get that pass anymore.
It's almost worked in his favour though, I think, in that because the club got it so horribly wrong. And he's stuck with Joe Linton through thin and thin, I suppose. And said, look, like what the hell are we supposed to do with this? So I suppose he's probably got a bit of credit in the bank from Ashley in that he tried it their way and it went so horribly wrong. He said, look, we can't go on like this. So I think that's probably kind of worked out from, obviously it's not great for us because we've got 40 million wasted on the bench now. And we're not going to recoup that. And knowing what Ashley's like, he's not going to write that off, is he? He's not a man to sort of take a loss lying down. But it's just, I think to answer the question, I think you have to give Bruce. And I know everything you're saying, and I agree with it to an extent. But you've got to respect that he has changed the policy because we have bought players differently, players that are proven in the Premier League, whether you like it or not, it's a fact. These are Premier League players. It is the Premier League players that three of them are in the prime of their career, whereas
was Shelvey and Townsend when they thought we'd get relegated that year. They didn't do enough that time, so they've gone one further to avoid relegation.
That was 4 or 5 years ago, though. It's because they didn't do it for the 3 years after.
The finances involved as well are different.
It's the age. It's the age as well. It's the age of
for the last 3 years. We had a
policy that they wouldn't sign players that were
for the previous 3 years. We had a manager who would keep us up without the need for it, so they didn't need to do it. They've shit themselves this year because we don't have as good a manager, and they needed to spend money to keep us up. To answer your question, Mickey, if we get to January and we're 14th in league, which I think is ambitious, but could happen. I was wrong last season. I could be wrong again. There'd be no point in spending any more money because what's going to happen? Like, they don't care if we finish 12th or 14th, do they? And you're not going to be able to spend money from that position and really, really accelerate up the league without spending serious money. So it'd be pointless. We might as well keep it in the bank and wait till the summer and either...
Well, like not spend it then as well.
Yeah, we're just hanging on for a takeover, aren't we? Or if Bruce gets to the end of his 2 years and think, right, I've had enough of that, get a new manager in, start again. Someone else has a bit of a project.
No way. Steve Bruce leaving this job after 2 years voluntarily. Not a chance. No chance.
You're probably right, but there'd be no point in spending money in January if we're in a reasonably safe position.
Who are you speaking as here?
Just someone being a realist. Like, what would be the point?
You wearing a Cy Camel mask?
I'd rather put the money in a low yield savings account and just wait till the Steve Bruce era passes and then spend it on some good players when we're a bit better.
I don't think now's the time for low yield savings accounts, to be honest, with the coronavirus. But this is an investment advice podcast, so we'll move on. I think that kind of wraps it up. It's been, you know, there's been some injections of positivity today, unexpectedly. Not many, but there's been a couple.
Wouldn't say injections, like a scratch.
We've been enthusiastic about our negativity.
Yeah, which is, you know, the best.
We've been enthustically negative.
The best summary we've had is that we've had 50% good and 50% bad so far.
That's average.
Yeah, long may it continue. George, thanks very much for joining us. This has been your True Faith podcast. If you like what you've heard, subscribe on Patreon. We do, I don't know how many shows we do now, maybe three to six a week, depending on what's going on. It seems to be a lot at the minute because there's a lot to cover. It's all negative, but there you go. I think we've got Keith Gillespie on the normal preview this week, so listen out for that
preview.
I'll be hosting that. No, the normal preview, oh, not the preview. Oh, well. And I think, Si, you're doing another show with Andy Griffin. Is that this week or possibly next week?
It's Gillespie's week. We've got them on rotation.
And thanks for sticking with True Faith. Cheers.